Yeah, best show. What's up, everybody? Another weird edition of the best show where it is me talking into a microphone alone on a Sunday night Zoom recorder. Monday night. Feels like a Sunday night because it's a holiday. Memorial Day, baby. Here we are. My name's Tom Sharpling, the host. Things are still weird. Things are still pandemic-y. And strange to see half the people not wearing masks now. I guess they assume that the COVID can take Memorial Day off. I guess maybe it can. Maybe they know something I don't. Whatever. I'm still wearing my mask, man. It's hard out there. A lot of people dealing with stuff. These numbers still ain't budging in certain ways. I don't know, man. We just got to be safe. What's a big deal if you suddenly were like, oh, we could have gone a little easier on the stuff, and then we didn't, and then it turned out, oh, you told me, so you're right. We could have gone a slightly bit easier on the mask, 6 feet, whatever. I don't know. I just know one thing. There was so much that we're all dealing with at the same time. You're dealing with real life stuff in your personal life. It's hard because when you got personal stuff going on, you wish the world would just sit still for a second and not be as topsy-turvy as your life is. But right now the world is a vampire, right? Like the man said, the world is a vampire. And we gotta listen to what the man said. And he said, the world is a vampire. That's not what he said.
Shakedown 1979.
I don't know. All I know is I saw Smashing Pumpkins open for Super Chunk and Urge Overkill at Maxwell's, and they were not good. And I got out then, and I got their first single in the mail as a promotional thing because they did a fanzine. I sold it for $100. And that was, and still might be, the highlight of my life. But those days are gone. Now we're all locked down, hiding. The world's upside down. We're all struggling collectively and a lot of us individually. I'm still dealing with just still really, really just gut punched and destroyed by Lynn Shelton. Coming to terms with that, helping however I can with the people that loved her, and hard. And the loss is so hard, and I know people in the comedy world, their friend Richard Bain passed away, and that's a tragedy, and I send my just heartfelt condolences to all the people that loved him, because I know what it's like to love somebody and have them go, and it's the hardest, and you have my condolences. And if you've lost anybody with the coronavirus, I feel for you. We're all in it, trying to stay alive, stay healthy, stay together. It's hard. Moo, what did I watch the other day? Watched a movie, Ghost of Peter Sellers. I want to tell you about this. If you ever wanted to not like Peter Sellers, well, this is the documentary for you. Boy, oh boy, this is not a good portrait of a demented, famous person. Yikes, he is no good in this thing, but it's the story of him doing a movie in the early to mid-70s that started falling apart early and never got back on track and got weirder and harder, and he got worse and worse and worse and was more difficult, and maybe the director was not the right director for it either. I don't know, but nobody was the right thing for this thing because it was not good. But it's a very good documentary made by the director of the movie that was being made in the ghost of Peter Sellers called Ghost in the Noonday Sun, I believe that. Was that what it was called? I'm not sure. It didn't seem like it was going to be a great movie. It seemed like an Argo when they're talking all about the script Argo. It's the worst. Feels like this movie, Ghost in Noonday Sun, was kind of like the Argo within Argo. Not so hot. Yeah, it's a compelling thing, though, and it really is a compelling movie when you look at performers and comedians especially and how they lose themselves in the characters and try to become other people and do their thing and still be humans, and sometimes you can't do all of it at once. And that's what they're doing. In this, you see Peter Sellers trying into, you see Spike Milligan's in it, one of his goon show cohorts. The goons! He talked to every British person. Oh, the goons! Look, I listen to goons. It's good. I get it. It's good stuff. I see it. I see the energy. I see the funny stuff. Maybe some don't translate to a U.S. person in 2020. But I get it. I see what's going on there. This guy's talented. Obviously one of the greats, all-timers. But if you can watch Ghost of Peter Sellers, the Ghost of Peter Sellers, rent it online, and you can do it through, I believe it was through Vimeo, and you could support an independent movie theater in the process, which is definitely the thing to do. And we really still need to keep supporting our record stores, supporting our bookstores, supporting our movie theaters, supporting the arts so that they are here for us when this is all over. And speaking of which, I thank each and every one of you who is supporting the Patreon for The Best Show over at patreon.com/thebestshow. I appreciate it. We're giving you more content. This past week we missed because I was dealing with personal stuff. A little sad. Couldn't talk about Stephen Stills album last week, but we're doing a show called So Far, which is me and Jason Gore and Mike, AP Mike, and Pat Byrne going through the entirety of the Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Young catalog collectively and individually and in any pairing that they chose to put together. We are going through all of it, and there will be a new episode in a week. We missed a week. I apologize. Get back on track. We got some other things, couple surprises here and there coming. Meet My Friends of Friends is on hiatus right now, but I believe we're going to figure something out to give you all a big shot in the arm if you're a fan of that. That way you can listen to them all in one fell swoop. Get pumped for the return of that, which is around the corner. Coming soon. Hang tight. But yeah, thanks to everybody who supported has supported the show over at patreon.com/thebestshow. And I also want to mention, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention that doing double duty lately on a show called Double Threat, me and Julie Klausner being funny together. That's over on the Forever Dog Network. Get it wherever you get podcasts. And I got to say, it is the funniest. Julie's the funniest. She makes me funny. And the two of us together become a Voltron of comedy. And it's so much fun to do this episode we just did last week. Got some Garrison Keillor in there. Got some nerd talk in there. A lot of stuff. Good really funny episode. Oh my God, I laughed so much. And you will too. People are loving it, and I appreciate you checking it out and supporting it, and it's only going to keep getting better. That's the crazy thing. We're at the beginning on that one. Double Threat. One other thing I watched, watched about six episodes into this Bulls, this commercial that ESPN aired for Michael Jordan, called The Last Dance. This propaganda program that was, just a compelling trash. It was interesting to see the clips again and see some of these people talking. It was great. But it's just a commercial for Michael Jordan. It's not even remotely resembling a documentary. He got last say on everything, final word. That's not how you do documentary. If a guy don't want to do, you tell him to pound rocks. Tell him, well, thanks, but no thanks. We'll do. And anyway, what's he saying? He says nothing in the thing. He's so boring. Michael Jordan's one of those boring people ever. And what a snooze this guy was. With the phony baloney, be like Mike. Can you imagine be like Mike? You sign off on that. What are you? That's the problem. Guys like that with that dumb thing are why sports so often are terrible, because they're the ones that make it's like, what about the children watching? The children. Children. What kid's watching a 10:30 Clippers Jazz game? On the East Coast. No kid. It's war on the East Coast. Right now. Great song. It's my boy. Danny B. Holding it down. New pornographers. Listening to a lot of Destroyer. Listening to a lot of new pornographers lately. Keeping the lights on over in my little brain here. Yeah, it's the whole thing. He makes this thing so it seems like it's juvenile, and then you can't act like sports are being played by adults, primarily for adults. Like, now everything has to be dumbed down so that it can please the dumbest kid. We all have to act like sports are just, like it's, the superheroes now. Good guys and bad guys. And that's part of this Michael Jordan thing. It creates this dumb, juvenile climate with that dumb Space Jam, stupid Be Like Mike. It's embarrassing. You're an adult. And Charles Barkley is the antidote to this guy. Thank God for him during that time. As much of a mess as he is, I'll take one of him over 10 Michael Jordans. And I didn't root for him. I was not rooting for Charles Barkley. When I was back then in the 90s, I didn't root for him. He was on the Sixers and he's on the Suns. I don't care. But man, he was, at least he acted like an adult. A flawed adult, but he didn't pretend he was talking to 8-year-olds all the time. Yeah, Michael Jordan is just like, oh, he's 6 championships, the most successful. It's like, okay, yeah, you know what else is successful? McDonald's is. And he's like McDonald's. He's good. He's the best. He's the most successful. But is there anything there sometimes? Yeah, there is, but sometimes there is. Maybe it's not exactly like McDonald's. Okay. Look, was he one of the best? He's one of the three best, at worst, one of the three best players ever. If you're going to say, who would you say the other two would be? Bill Russell. He was not. I don't know. Will Chamberlain. I don't know. I'm just saying. Okay, so you say he's top two. Top two all the time. Michael Jordan or LeBron James. Who would you rather hang out with? The one guy who looks like he's having fun and actually speaks out on social issues and stands up for the side of good on things, or the guy who says the thing about Republicans buy sneakers too and then tries to make like that was like a, you don't get to say that and then pretend you didn't mean it when you said it. Yeah, he sucks. Look, part of this is the Bulls beat the Knicks. I know that. But really, what did the Bulls do? I want to just put this out there. Who'd they beat? They beat an old Pistons team, then they beat an old Lakers team, then they beat a not-so-hot Blazers team, then they did beat the Suns, who were awesome, and then they came back, lost to the Magic, then they beat the Jazz twice. Whoa, the Jazz. Oh, you guys beat Jeff Hornacek? What? Oh, my God. You mean the Bulls squared off against Greg Ostertag and they won? How? I'm not even starting on Phil Jackson. Is fraud. He's a fraud. Is he talentless? Absolutely not. He's obviously talented. Is he overrated? Oh, yeah. You know it, too. Worst team the dude ever coached was top 10 all-time player Kobe Bryant and only Pau Gasol, a perennial all-star. Worst team he ever coached to a championship. When it's just Scottie Pippen, he couldn't get out of the second round. Now, he rolls the ball out and he goes to the library and picks out books for the players. That's all he does. Phil Jackson. Phony baloney. And all this Bull stuff, you know what it made me realize? For years I've been saying, look, the Knicks are literally the worst. Capital T, capital W, the worst. But you know what they made me decide? I've been writing for basketball magazines, made me become like a fan of players, because you start to be like, you understand that the players are the fun part of the game, obviously, but you don't want to be like, you don't want to be able to not root for or not enjoy a player being great because they are not on your team. And intersect that with the Knicks being the worst. I stepped away from the Knicks a little bit. I'm saying this. I think I'm going all in. They're terrible now. I don't care. I'm going all in. I might get a Knicks face tattoo. I love the Knicks. And I'm saying it now. I'm going back in. Even as bad as they are, I don't care. I'm back in. All the way back in. Knicks, baby. That's my team. That's my team now. Knicks. Back in with them. When the NBA returns in 2027, I will be cheering them on. We can talk more about this, and we will talk more about this. But today on the show, we have a fun episode. Short one. We'll do a longer show next week. We'll pick it back up. The show will start getting longer again. Start hitting all the elements. Get Worcester. Get the dudes back on. All the stuff. Eventually get calls back on. We'll figure it all back. It's all going to happen. I'm just trying to keep the lights on. Keep the show going. In the face of times where I sometimes I'm not at 100%. Want to do a show for you. Want to do a show for me. Nicole Lawrence is on the show. She's the guitarist who was in King Tuff, plays with Devendra Banhart. Great person, great guitarist. Talk to her about her top picks on the guitar Mount Rushmore and Mount Rockmore. Ugh. And then she recorded a song that we'll play at the end of the show. Very nice, awesome song. So, I will tell you this, best show will be back next week. Thanks for listening. And without further ado, let's listen to my conversation, which I did remotely in Los Angeles with a 25-foot mic cord with my friend Nicole Lawrence, who you can check out on social media. And if you need guitar lessons, she's doing them remotely. She's the best in the biz, as they say. Check her out. And here, without further ado, is my conversation with Nicole Lawrence.
Hi, Tom.
Hi, Nicole. How are you? I got Nicole Lawrence here. The legendary...
No way. Stop.
No. You're a guitar player.
I'm a guitar owner.
Guitar owner. That's... Oh, wow. What an accomplishment.
Thank you.
You bought a guitar.
I've been working so hard. Yeah, me and everyone else in LA.
No, you are a guitar player and you play with all sorts of people.
Yep.
Like you've played with King Tuff.
Yeah.
You were in King Tuff's band.
Yep, for a while. Kind of a while.
And then you were in Mary Timoney's band. Was it called Helium at first when you were in it?
It was a Helium. It was that tour was really billed as Mary Timoney Plays Helium. We were playing the Helium catalog.
Mm-hmm. There's two Helium records and then a singles. Like a collection.
Right. Yeah, and we played stuff from everything. Mm-hmm. We had songs from everything.
Yeah. And that's where we met, was at Doug Weston's The Troubadour.
Doug Weston's The Troubadour. I'm really worried about Doug Weston these days.
I don't know what's going to happen to Doug Weston's The Troubadour. That's in a pretty pricey neighborhood.
Yeah, that is where we met.
Yeah.
That was such an auspicious night. I met Kyle from King Tuff that same night.
Isn't that crazy? How in one night all these your world turned around that night.
That was a great show. I loved playing that show.
Oh my God. Because, look, Mary Timoney is a guitar hero.
Hero.
Unparalleled.
Icon. Yep.
Until that night, I was like, well, she is paralleled. Paralleled. But who's this? Who's this ringer up there with her?
You're so kind.
Who's this gunslinger?
Yeah.
Rolling into town with her six string. No, you were there and it was fun watching the two of you just go off.
Yeah.
And it was so exciting to see, because when you have that second guitar player, then it seems like she could go nuts.
There's nothing better than two lead guitars.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, she really could go off and like we really played off each other a lot and she's just such a, she's such a good player and she's such a performer. And
let's ride that mic. Come on, into the mic.
Sorry.
You know how it works. You make like you're on stage.
She's such a performer.
There you go. Thank you.
And it was such a joy to play with her because we got to play off each other so much, you know.
Yeah, and then you did like this insane version of James Gang Walk Away.
Yep.
Just heavy duty.
So there's a Helium song called Walk Away.
Yeah.
And if you recall, we segued from the
into
Helium Walk Away into mm-hmm. the James Gang Walk Away, which was a very specific version of the James Gang song. The version we did was a sort of the version that they did on Beat Club when they were on Beat
Club.
Sure,
which is one of the all-time greatest rock performances ever.
Iconic.
When you see them with that keyed out background.
Yeah.
Right? And
yeah.
They're just like...
Yeah.
And that's like Joe Walsh. That is the most... Has there ever been a step down like that dude joining the Eagles? When you think about how great he was at that point.
Right.
He was a fully formed guy. Right. He was like his... He was not like an up-and-coming guy. They were a popular band.
Yeah.
And then... I guess maybe they ran their course. I don't know. I think James Gang had kind of, because he had a couple solo albums out at that point, right? Before
he joined the Eagles?
Yeah.
I think so. I don't know the exact chronology, but yeah, I think those were out before he was in the Eagles. Yeah.
Yeah. So that seems like that feels like a Irving Azoff kind of, like he probably managed both of them or something.
Right.
I think it's in that 9 hours Eagles documentary.
Eagles documentary.
Yeah, I remember.
Eagles.
It explains everything. 9 hour Eagles documentary.
No, just Eagles.
Just Eagles. I'm sorry to disrespect.
No, I'm not correcting you. Yeah. I'm just making sure everyone at home knows.
Sure. It's not the football team.
No, it's not the Eagles. That's different. No.
Yes. And it was, because what would the equivalent of that be is.
Yeah, because that's not a lateral move. That's worse than a lateral move.
Yeah. I think I had proposed that. What would it be? The modern day equivalent, and somebody had said it would be like if Jack White joined Coldplay. And that's what it would be like, where you'd just be like, yeah, he's a fully formed guitar player.
Oh yeah.
Like somebody who can totally shred, and then now he's with these clowns.
He is such, do you think that he just decided that he had peaked? And then just wanted to write it out?
That Joe Walsh had?
Yeah.
He probably just wanted an easier go of it, maybe.
Yeah.
Like where he could do his thing still on the side.
Yeah.
And then, but then be a part of this, just this cash machine.
Right.
That just printed money.
Right.
And then they had Hotel California as soon as he joined. Then they had their biggest album.
Yeah.
Man, I don't know. That sucks. The Eagles are bad. Where are you at on Eagles? Sorry.
Eagles?
Yes.
I'm not an Eagles fan. I really just stick with, like, James Gang Rides Again.
Yeah.
I never got into the Eagles. Eagles. I never got into Eagles. I don't even understand how you're supposed to say that.
No. Because there's, like, a better version of everything. Like,
right.
There's, like, everything that they did, somebody else was better at it. Right?
I think so.
It's like, oh, if you like country rock, then you go listen to Gram Parsons.
Oh, right. Yeah, exactly.
Like, there's always somebody doing it better than them.
Right.
But they were just like cool dudes, I guess, because they had their, Don Henley had that fro.
Right.
And
that's the real appeal, I think.
I think it might have just been the fro, the singing drummer fro.
Right.
Yeah. So then you were with Mary Tate. That's where we met. Then you, when that tour ended,
mm-hmm.
then you went and you toured with King Tuff
yep.
all over the place. Multiple
yeah.
tours.
Several tours.
Rocking it out.
Yep.
And then you leveled up. Not in an artistic way, just in a scope way. Like then you went to be, like you joined Devendra Banhart's band, and
right.
that's like theaters and stuff. I'm not putting a
judgment
on
no, it's
music.
It's a different thing. It's a different world.
Yeah,
it's the same world in a way, but yeah, it's a totally.
Yeah, I love King Tuff. I'm not.
No, I know. That. I know you do. But
it is a weird adjustment, huh?
But that's the thing that I think is cool about working with different artists and why different, you know, people who put out records and make their own records, you know, any of the stuff that we're talking about, James Gang, Eagles, Mary Timony, it's like when you make stuff like that, you're kind of creating a universe, right?
Yeah.
Like you're creating this kind of world And I started playing with Devendra and like walked into his universe that he sort of built and like his songs and the characters of his songs and the landscape of his songs.
Mm-hmm.
And it's totally different than Kyle's for sure, you know?
Oh yeah, because how many guitar players are on stage when you're with Devendra?
It depends. Depends on the show. We did one show where we had just one time this happened. I think we had five guitars on stage.
Five guitars. That's like the E Street Band or
yeah,
something.
That was an anomaly.
But how can you even tell what you're doing?
It maybe we wouldn't do that again.
Sure. That's like, who had five? Molly Hatchet had four, I think.
Is that true?
I think Molly had, I know they had at least three.
Wow.
But just like.
That's too many.
That is too many. Unless you're all going to do the, to do it all like in sync with each other and do like banner, like imagine when you're seeing Molly Hatchet
yeah.
and suddenly they're doing Flirting with Disaster.
Right.
And when they go to that part, we're like, people must have been going nuts.
Right.
When they're all in tandem like that.
There's a real law of diminishing returns.
Sure.
When you start adding guitars that way.
Oh yeah. Cause then you end up like the E Street Band, just like, eight people playing guitars and you can't hear any of them.
Right.
It just turns into just like mid range kind of just like, all you hear is like vocals and drums and just this just wash of sound.
That's kind of what somebody said when we did that show with five guitars.
That it just became like a.
We heard one comment after that. Someone said, I saw five guitars, but I couldn't hear any of them.
They start canceling each other out.
They do.
That's so strange.
Yeah. So with Devendra, there's usually two.
Okay.
Usually he and I are, or sometimes Jeremy Harris, who's in the band, he plays guitar
okay.
as well.
Yeah.
Fantastic players mm-hmm. in that band.
And you're playing, you went all over the world with that tour.
Yeah, we
Crazy.
Did. We did full U.S. and Canada, and then we were in Europe just mm-hmm. in January and February.
Yeah, right before
yeah.
the world shut down.
It was kind of starting as we were over there.
Mm-hmm.
But we didn't know.
Could you feel the impending shutdown? Like, oh, you
yes.
could feel it? Like,
yes, but we didn't know, you know? Like, we mm-hmm. really, you know, it was still this really distant idea. Like, we were in Milan 2 weeks before the outbreak in Milan.
Wow.
So it was like this, it like was
sort
of... I'm
going to burn that microphone.
You might have to burn... Yeah, we'll just leave this microphone on the street after I'm done talking into it.
If you're in Los Feliz and you're driving around, you might find a microphone.
Yeah.
Just by a stop
sign. Don't touch it.
So you were there right before it really went down.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we came back to the States. We all came back to L.A. and... within 2 weeks, I think, stuff was shutting down here in L.A., which was really surprising because we weren't expecting it when we were in Europe, you know?
Yeah.
Happened fast, you know?
It rolled through pretty fast.
Yeah.
And how have you been coping with the quarantine?
I'm riding it out. I feel pretty good most days. I'm trying to explore it as an opportunity.
Sure.
The best that I can, you know, learning French.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
It's hard.
No, it's quite fun.
Well, no, I mean, it's hard. I'm just coping is hard.
Coping is hard, you know, but it's yeah, I mean, it's hard to be with yourself, but it's also really interesting to be with yourself. And I'm, you know, I'm just kind of doing what I do. I'm practicing my guitar.
Sure.
I'm teaching with some, teaching guitar with some people that I work with, and
so you're zooming it up with that?
Yeah, we do it on the FaceTime.
Sure, on the FaceTime.
Yeah.
Okay.
Online.
Sure.
And that's been really cool. It's been really nice to work with other people, and like obviously nobody can play shows right now.
You know, what's hard to me about the whole thing is that there's this spectrum of, like, first of all, there's no reference point for this. Like, nobody can go, like, well, when we went through the quarantine, it was like, this is how we got through it. Like, literally nobody in America can give you, can be a guide for how they coped with the quarantine.
A great point.
So everybody, this is new to everybody.
Right.
And some people are like, if you don't come out of this without a serious side hustle figured out, you did it wrong. And it's like, well, that's a lot of pressure. And then there's other people who are just like, you don't have to do anything during this. You just have to stay alive. And it's like, well, that's hard. That's like, I got to do more than that.
A little more.
Yeah. Like, I mean, we all have these days where we don't move.
Right.
And then, but you can't, hopefully you wouldn't have all of the days be that, because then that would be just months of nothing. Because you just have to start reassembling your life to some degree.
Right.
So, but just like striking some kind of balance is hard.
Yeah.
That's what I struggle with.
I think that's the whole thing, you know, is like finding that middle path where you can ride the line between being productive and not being overly obsessive about being productive and also not just sitting around all day.
Yeah. So you're doing these lessons on the FaceTime.
Yeah.
And let me just say this. This is not a commercial. You're not sponsoring the show. I am going to say this, though. If you're looking for guitar lessons...
Oh, my God, Dom.
No, I'm saying... I'm sorry. I'm saying I have to say this. You just hit up Nicole on Instagram, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
What's the handle?
It's at Nicole Lawrence with some underscores. You'll find it. Or just hit up Tom. He's got all my info.
Just look for me, and I follow Nicole, and you can find it. But, yeah. So you can learn how to shred.
It's been really, sincerely, it's been a really cool, cause I, you know, we came back from tour and I just like started going deeper into teaching since we couldn't tour. And sincerely, it's actually been, it's been really rewarding for me to work with people in that way. And it just like, you know, cause I try to take my own practice seriously, you know, and like to a devotional degree and you know, there's so many other, I'm meeting and connecting with so many other people who are kind of like that. And it's really, it's just really fun to connect with people that are that are as into something as I am or as you are, you know.
Now, what do we start with if I start guitar? What do we start with? Smoke on the Water?
If you start guitar?
Day Tripper. What are we starting with?
Are you coming in with any skills? Brand new.
Let's say I can noodle a little bit. I know a few open chords.
You know some open chords.
And I can do some bar chord. I can do some basic. I can do some basic chords.
Well,
but
you know
I'm not
what,
good.
You know, okay. You know what I like to do with people is I like to see what they're excited by.
Okay.
You know?
Uh-huh.
And what sounds or songs they're curious about. And,
sure.
And pick some of that stuff out. So some of my beginning students, a lot of people are really into, our friend Jenny Lewis, who's a fantastic musician living in Los Angeles.
Sure, yeah.
So we do some Jenny Lewis songs. We've done some Angel Olsen songs.
So those are more song based. Those are like strumming,
strummy
chord
things. Yeah, but you want to rip? You want a solo? Is that what?
Well, I'm trying to figure out here. So if I'm looking to be a singer songwriter, you would. So, but the guitar is an accompaniment to this. It's making the song happen.
Right.
Then some Jenny Lewis or Angel Olsen. That makes sense.
Yeah.
So what would it be like? Don't know what I'm gonna do. Right? You
yeah.
do that song?
Yeah. Definitely.
Right?
Yep.
Yeah, so you'll do that. Then, but what if I'm just like, I need to shred?
If it's you, I think I'm gonna teach you some Mick Taylor licks.
Well, that's your, cause this is also a good gauge of, with people, where you find out, with certain people who are into music, it's like which Rolling Stones guitarist is their is their guitarist.
Yeah.
And Mick Taylor is yours.
In terms of the Stones, for sure.
So
yeah,
you'd rank the Stones guitarist, you'd say Mick Taylor over Keith Richards.
I would, yeah.
Just because he just goes off.
I like his phrasing, mm-hmm. and I like the I like his left hand technique.
Sure. And you're talking about we're talking about what now? We're talking about sticky fingers.
I'm talking about sticky fingers personally.
Sure.
That's my record. And I liked him in the Blues Breakers. His Blues Breakers record that he
sure.
did was really
okay.
good.
So you like, so that's like, but then you'd say Mick Taylor.
Right.
Then Keith Richards.
Yep.
Then you'd say, you're putting Brian Jones last, first of all. I know that. I know you think nothing of Brian Jones. You think he's just a textural.
I think he's a genius.
Mm-hmm.
It's you know, again, it goes back to that thing of, like, creating worlds. And he built a really cool, interesting world. It's just, like, it's just a taste thing, you know?
Well, it's almost like his thing stayed in the 60s.
It sure did.
In a strange way.
Yeah.
It made sense in the 60s and
yeah.
stayed in the 60s.
It's like, very 60s.
Because his thing was kind of cracking open from their original R&B-based thing to add new instruments to the mix and add different feels to it that... yeah, I would say, I'm going to go with Brian Jones always because those are my favorite records. That's my guy.
That's your guy. He's one of your guys.
So Ron Wood, is he last on your list?
Yeah, because I don't even really think about him.
Because he's just, I mean, he joined on Black and Blue.
Right.
Which I know a lot of people try to do a lot of... a lot of reconsidering of that record. But it's not the great... Like, people are like, It's a hidden masterpiece.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
And it's like, look, Memory Motel, that's a great song.
Yeah.
I'm not gonna complain about that.
Yeah.
But it's a slightly sleepy album.
Yeah.
Some Girls, I know people get mad when, I think Some Girls is like, almost like a fake Rolling Stones record.
Right, right.
In a strange way.
Yeah.
It's like, we can keep up with the punks. It's like, okay. Well, it's fine. It's perfectly fine.
Yeah.
Some Girls is fine. I don't put it on.
I don't either.
It does not call out to me.
Right.
And then after that, then it's just the Tattoo You. I don't need to hear that.
I don't need to hear that.
I never need to hear Start Me Up ever again.
Never again. No.
The only thing I ever wanted to hear was John Daly do Cheer Me Up. When he did that song, he did his version, Cheer Me Up.
Uh-huh.
The only thing I wanted. But I don't need Start Me Up ever again.
Right.
Waiting on a Friend.
No, I'm good. Yeah.
Any of those. Yeah. It's fine. He did what he did, but he's been in the band for 85 years. He's like their longest. He's just like after Keith, he's the longest running guitarist, right?
I think so.
I mean, just Mick Taylor was in for four years.
Oh, like
years?
5 minutes. Yeah. And he'll talk about how bad they were. And when you read interviews with Mick Taylor from that timer when they were making, like, Exile, it's really interesting because he'll say that he'll say things like, when they were good, they were the best band in the whole world, but most of the time they really sucked.
That's really funny. Yeah. That's where they were, that just like, but you only have to put the record together once.
Just one time.
And then it stands forever.
Yeah.
So we're talking about guitarists. Look, because you're a shredder.
Oh.
You're heavy duty. You lay it down. You attack. You're on the attack.
Not really.
No, but you can be. You can attack. You're not always in fight mode. You're not going looking for fights. You're like the person that you're like the person that secretly knows like karate. And then you could at any time you could beat the tar out of somebody. But you just don't go around looking for fights.
I don't go around looking for fights, no, that's true.
But they just don't know. It's like,
yeah.
Nobody told me she knew karate.
That's funny.
I'm in the hospital now. So we're talking about the all-timers.
All-timers.
Let's see here. Who's the Mount Rushmore for you?
Oh, God. I'll get in trouble.
No, but people understand that it's not like you like only four guitarists.
Right. I don't know. I mean, it changes. It changes, you know? It changes over time.
All right, I'm going to give a 1 to 10 rating on these. And we're not going to name people you know, so you're not going to hurt anybody's feelings.
Okay. I like all the guitar players I know. But
Jimmy
go ahead.
Jimmy Page?
He's not on my Mount Rushmore. I mean, you know, he's amazing, obviously.
So scale of 1 to 10.
Oh, God.
Are you going to give him a 9?
Pagey? I give him a 7.
A 7? Did you ever hear Custard Pie?
Sure, yeah. I've heard Custard Pie. Yeah.
You ever hear Cashmere?
I've heard Cashmere, yeah.
You know, he was the producer on those records,
yeah,
too.
Brilliant. I give him a 10 out of 10 for producing.
Okay, well,
yeah,
good.
For sure. Said.
And he was a messy guitar player, which is what I like about his stuff. There's like actual.
That's why he got the 7.
But there's mistakes on Led Zeppelin records.
For sure, and that's amazing. That's great. You know, that's why they're cool.
Because it's about feel. He knew what felt right, and he also didn't need to be up front all the time. Well, Cashmere. It's like, look at Cashmere is like second to Stairway to Heaven in terms of their epics.
But you think that Jimmy Page was the lead singer of?
Oh, that's my opinion.
That's your thing, right?
My thing is that Jimmy Page was the front man of Led Zeppelin.
Yeah.
And Robert Plant is only the person that just verbalized.
Right.
That they needed someone to sing alongside.
He's like the Jennifer Harima.
Yes, exactly.
Of Led Zeppelin.
So, yeah. Well, Neil Haggard, he's top. He's way up there.
Sure. Amazing.
He's an all-timer.
Yeah.
And you were on the Howling Hex record.
I am on the new Howling Hex record, yeah.
And that's a great record.
Yeah.
And so you've played with a lot of these titans. So let's see. Jimmy Page gets a 7. Eric Clapton, he can't get higher than Jimmy Page.
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead. Well, you know, we got to talk about eras, but peak Clapton, close to a 10.
And what era are we talking?
Well, he peaked a couple times. So, I mean, right out of the gate, Blues Breakers, Beano record.
Sure.
I love the Blind Faith record.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do too. That's one of those records that I think people think it's not good.
Or they forget about it because there's only one record.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But because it like wasn't. Because it was one record, and there's not much of a legacy there.
No, and it's I feel like it's a short record.
Yeah.
Like one side is that whole one long song, right?
Worst album cover ever.
The secondary album cover, where they're just sitting around, or the one like the censored one.
The censored one.
You know, neither of them are that good.
Yeah,
neither album cover is that good. They're both bad for different reasons. Yeah, yeah.
Whether you see a boring photo of them sitting around or a topless child.
Yeah, both are a problem.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I think that record's incredible. Mm-hmm. Steve Winwood.
That's the best thing Steve Winwood ever did.
Probably is, right? Yeah. Probably is, yeah.
So you have... So what's the era then?
Probably my favorite is the Blind Faith record, but the stuff he did on Beatles songs. I mean, on the George Harrison.
Yeah, on like All Things Must Pass.
On All Things Must Pass, his guitar playing on I'd Have You Anytime is, mm-hmm. in my opinion, perfect.
Sure. No, that is one of the most perfectly constructed records.
Beautiful.
I had this goal. Mm-hmm. I wanted to do. I wrote the people, you know those 33 and a third books?
Of course, yeah.
I wrote them.
Yeah.
And I was like,
I recall.
What if I did All Things Must Pass?
Oh.
For you guys.
Yeah.
And it was just like, I had this vision. I was going to like, because somebody's got to get Eric Clapton to talk about that before he dies.
It's a great point.
George Harrison's gone. Phil Spector was half gone during the session. He's not going to talk now. He's in the slammer. And then it's like so many of those people are just not around now who are on that record. It's like you want to hear somebody talk about what it was like, because that was the weirdest kind of cross-pollination era between Derek and the Dominoes.
Right,
and
yeah.
And All Things Must Pass.
Right.
And then you're bleeding into that with like Delaney and Bonnie.
Right.
They had all those things where they were jumping on with
Which
them.
Is also, it's there's some good, some of that stuff is good, the Delaney and Bonnie stuff.
But it's such an interesting period of just like these people were all really just doing stuff with each other.
Right.
And,
it's amazing.
And then you have, but I wanted to do it. And then they wrote me back and they were just like, our submission period is between here. It's like, get lost. Sorry, I'm not doing a don't you know who I am thing here, but I, on that one I am.
Yeah.
If I'm going to do a thing like that, I would have been tracking Eric Clapton down to talk in that thing.
You're the only person who can write that book.
Well, it's never going to happen.
I want to read it.
Yeah. Well, dream on. So, Clapton 10 at his peak. So that's his first. That's the first peak?
I don't know.
Or it's a straight line. Because you think, where are you on a Cream then?
I like Cream. I like Cream, but I don't like Cream the whole way through.
Mm-hmm.
I like that live Cream record.
Sure.
Quite a bit.
Do you like Badge?
I like Badge. Like NSU.
But the painting had a mustache. That's a good song.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
I like that.
Yep.
I don't like Cream that much.
I get it.
I think there were better psychedelic bands, obviously. Like, I'd rather listen to Pretty Things than Cream if I want to hear.
Yeah. Well, there's all this pretense around this whole thing, that whole 60s thing of it being psychedelic, you know?
Yeah.
It's I don't know if it aged that well.
Mm-hmm. So then we're talking, so we got pages of 7. Clapton's bordering on a 10.
This is why I said I'm going to get in trouble.
No, but who's going to get, what, are you going to get yelled at by Jan Wenner?
Yeah, probably.
So then who are the other legends then? We're talking like...
In that style?
Well, like where's Jimi Hendrix then?
Oh, Jimi Hendrix. 10.
10.
10.
Mm-hmm.
10.
Yeah.
Totally.
John McLaughlin. Where's he?
Not necessarily one of my guys.
Okay.
Peter Green.
Sure.
Like Peter Green.
You like Peter Green.
Yeah. Fleetwood Mac.
Yeah. He was
Albatross.
Yeah, and that gets forgotten. Lost to time.
Well, yeah.
Just because of the other Fleetwood Mac. That you're not a huge fan of.
No, I am. They're great.
Mm-hmm.
But I just think about guitars most of the time. So.
Okay. So then you got Jeff Beck. Not your guy?
Not my guy.
He's always seemed boring to me.
Yeah. It's just, you know...
And I'm not putting... Like, all these people...
Same.
First of all, they all made it. They all succeeded.
They're amazing. All these guys are amazing.
Yeah. So who's the most underrated guitar player then?
Who's the most underrated, like historically underrated guitar player?
Yeah. Like who's like a secret hero to you?
Honestly, I don't know, but if... I know we talked about it before, but Joe Walsh is unbelievable.
Sure.
You know, like, he does, people, he doesn't tend to come up in these conversations around, like, Hendrix and and whatever, but, like, his left-hand vibrato, he's so deep into technique, which is so funny because he doesn't necessarily seem like the most technical person.
No, because he's kind of portraying himself as a buffoon.
Right.
But he's like, he knows what he's doing.
So good.
Which is what, that's the only way you can be a buffoon, really.
Right.
Is to, you act worse than you are.
Right.
Which is the thing I can say for me personally.
Yeah.
I can say for me personally, I know how to act like a buffoon. And act dumber than I am. And then people are just like, oh, he's... Because then when you seem half smart, then they're just like, oh, he's actually smart.
Yeah.
And you're just like, no, I just act dumber. Act a little dumber than I am.
Right. You lower the expectation.
Yeah. And then then you say something average and people give you credit
people
for being smart.
Impressed. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. I'm going to try that.
Well, trust me, it works.
All right.
You can... That's my lessons. Yeah. I teach
buffoonery.
Lessons. You gotta teach buffoonery.
Right.
I'm gonna be on FaceTime doing buffoonery.
Cool. Sign me up.
So then we're talking. So you say Joe Walsh then.
Joe Walsh is great.
Mm-hmm.
Really technical player. Incredible left hand vibrato. Incredible right hand technique.
Mm-hmm. And is it hard being off the road for you? Is it hard?
Yes and no. Yes and no. I feel like it's sort of hard for me to be like a normal person, like coming and going in and out of my house. But when I'm home, I really hunker down into being home and I kind of like that, you know, mm-hmm. like can get really, really into it, into the extreme. So I actually love being on the road, but I'm kind of mentally either like all the way out or all the way in, you know?
And now you're all the way in.
I'm all the way in.
Yeah.
And it's been going on for a minute now. Yeah, and I do miss it. You know, the last tour we did with Devendra in Europe was really exceptional. It was a really special, beautiful time. Mm-hmm. So it's nice to, you know, look at those pictures and reflect on that, you know. But
you'll be back.
We'll be back.
You'll be back. And
you
then,
know.
Can you imagine that first time everybody gets to go to a show again? Oh, my
it's gonna
God.
It's going
to
be unbelievable. It's going to be.
People can see the worst band they ever saw in their life, and they'll be crying.
Yeah.
But it's going to be a really good time if you're not that good.
Right.
if you're not that good
like
at anything.
Be like a dream come true. Yeah, I think we all try not to take it for granted, but it's going to be a whole new level of gratitude.
Oh, my God.
You know.
People are going to be really into just seeing other people.
Yeah.
At a thing. It'd be great. You go to a show and you have to get your temperature taken as you walk in. What a weird thing that's going to be.
You know what I've been thinking about lately, though, is just the way that the performance environment changes your playing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I'm in isolation. I'm not playing with other people.
Yeah.
And you know, but when you're improvising or there's a crowd or you don't know what's going to happen just sort of that feeling, that feeling of being sort of surprised or having to be really being really sort of tuned in musically to what's happening around you and being surprised musically by things happening around you.
Sure.
That's what I'm missing.
That's
these
Jeremy,
days.
Yeah. That guy, I think that was Mick Fleetwood.
Is that who that was?
By. Looked like.
Did you see his dangling?
I missed all of it.
Okay.
I saw the beard.
No, I mean, you know, the things that Mick Fleetwood wears, those dangling.
Oh, those little.
The lavatory balls that he wears on his belt.
Yeah, that. Maybe. That might be my least favorite thing about.
About Fleetwood
Mac?
About
Fleetwood. That's definitely my least favorite thing about Fleetwood Mac.
Yeah.
Might be my least favorite thing about Earth.
It's a surprising choice, but it's a consistent and long-lived choice. He's been doing it for a long time.
Oh, no, he's into it. And when when Fleetwood Mac would... When I saw them a few years ago, and then he did his big drum solo.
Yeah.
And he's like coming up. Like, he's like, he's mic'd and he's like kind of talking to himself as he's doing, like,
sure.
Yeah. Come on. Hey. And it's just like, I'm into it.
That's what I do home when I'm home alone. Talk to myself like that.
That's you at home. Yeah. You're like Mick Fleetwood in the middle of World Is Turning, the drum solo.
In the middle of a drum solo.
He, what do you think if those guys in Fleetwood Mac, like, you take them from like 1971, like you take like John McPhee and Mick Fleetwood, just like, hey, we want to show you, look into this crystal ball.
Into the crystal ball.
And see, it's like, this is what Fleetwood Mac looked like. And it's two ladies.
Right.
And the songs, there's no blues anywhere in this anymore. And then they're just like, what? And there's this whole era of Fleetwood Mac that gets lost, that whole Bob Welch era.
Incredible
people
era.
People do not talk about.
Love that era.
It's great stuff.
Yeah, that's sort of
Hypnotized.
I like Bare Trees.
Mm-hmm. That's,
you know,
great.
Yeah.
All those, there's those albums where Christine McVie was like the primary songwriter.
Right.
While they, before Lindsey Buckingham and Stevie Nicks joined.
Right.
Like, it was like Christine McVie and Bob Welch were holding it down.
Danny Kirwan is another really underrated guitar player.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Just forgotten. Mm-hmm. Really incredible player.
Yeah, because there were 75 eras of Fleetwood
Mac.
That's
right. Who can keep up?
Yeah. So 2020, we don't know what this is going to be now.
Mhm.
I don't know. What is advice you can give people to ride the ride of stay at home quarantine?
Ride the ride. I think it's the same thing I would say to anybody at any time, which is just like to be honest with yourself at all times in how you're living your life, you mm-hmm. know, and think in what your actions are in any given day. Does this feel like an honest action? Does this feel like the next appropriate thing I should be doing, and just do it one thing at a time?
Sure.
And
sure.
If you're doing it honestly, then it all feels pretty good most of the time, I think.
Yeah. If you can look yourself in the mirror and you know you're being truthful and decent.
Feel emotional.
That's kind of all you can do.
Yeah.
And speaking of emotional, I didn't even hear this yet. You recorded a song.
I did.
That we're going to hear after this conversation is over for the show. I'm excited to hear. What is it? Do you want to tell me what it is?
So I recorded it for the show. I wanted to do, you know, I'm living alone. I wanted to play a solo guitar tune, and I wanted to play an old song, and I wanted to play something that was sort of thematically relevant to what we were going through, what we are going through. So I played a version of a song called I'll Be Seeing You.
Sure. That's a great song. Well,
yeah.
I can't wait. Anything else you want to say, Nicole, to the people? Oh, well, I'm going to say this.
Okay.
Again, it doesn't matter if you're in Maine or you're in Cape Town. You want to play guitar. You hit Nicole up. You get on the face. As long as you got a phone.
Why, some Wi-Fi.
Some Wi-Fi.
You need some Wi-Fi.
Before you know it, you're going to be boom. Well, that's the bass, isn't it? No, that's the bass on that. It's like
we'll figure it out.
That's one of my favorite things, is the instrumental pieces to Heartbreaker that were online, and I'll do that
in
the sound collage when you hear just like, when he's just like, they're just the best. All I listen to now is Neil Young.
Yeah, I know.
And Destroyer.
Destroyer.
And what else was I listening to? I don't know. Neil Young and Destroyer. I think that might be it. And like a lot of jazz now seems to make sense to me for some reason.
Did you get into the Grateful Dead yet, Tom?
No, that'll never happen. That was like, because you are not a lifelong Dead fan.
I'm not I came to them a little later in life.
And what is the thing that made sense to you?
The version of Morning Dew on Europe 72.
Sure.
Life changer.
Look, Morning Dew's a good song.
Amazing.
I'm not saying
song.
They didn't do nothing right.
Yeah.
Morning Dew's a good song. And look, I've been doing this dumb Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young podcast, which is driving me nuts.
Right.
Because now we're listening to five Stephen Stills albums.
Yeah.
He records three a year.
Yeah.
And because he's in some arms race with Neil Young.
Absolutely.
To beat Neil.
Literally.
He's never going to. He can't touch it.
Yeah.
He can't touch it.
Can't touch it.
But it's like, Jerry plays his pedal steel all over their records.
He does.
I respect Jerry.
Yeah.
Jerry seemed like a nice guy.
Does he?
I think so.
I don't know.
I think it's the other ones I'm not so into.
Right.
Jerry seemed like a sad soul.
I think maybe, yeah.
Who was just this thing. He was a prisoner of his own success.
Yeah.
Because then, when they're playing like football stadiums, it's not about the music anymore.
I disagree.
Like, how can it be, though?
I totally disagree.
When it's bouncing back at you?
If it wasn't about if it wasn't about the music, people wouldn't still be, like, trading tapes in 2020, you know, of recordings from those shows.
Well, I don't know about that.
He's on my Mount Rushmore. That's all I'm saying.
Okay, he's on your Mount Rushmore. So you feel like you'd listen to, like, a show from RFK Stadium in 1990.
I would, yeah. Yep.
Ay-yi-yi.
I would.
Well, that's where we diverge. I can't do it.
Yeah.
I can't listen to.
That's okay.
Because they were just like about getting, high in the parking lot.
Who the fans?
The fans? The fans are not there for the music.
Yeah, but you're
anymore.
Not listening to recordings of the fans. You're listening to the songs.
Yeah, but the fans are, you can't, if it's an exchange of energy, they're getting some bad energy sent back at them.
That's a way
and
to look
his
at
health
it.
His health was not great, and now he didn't want to be doing these shows. He was like, this was not a pure experience.
I don't know. You have some of those recordings you listen to, and his voice is frail, but there's some real emotion in there.
Sure, because that's my other thing with them. He's their best singer, right?
Oh yeah, he's their only good singer.
But the thing is,
for sure,
in another group, he'd be the worst singer. He'd be the third singer.
Yeah.
If it was like the way Rick Danko is like perfect in the band.
Right.
Rick Danko's voice is amazing. I love it.
Unbelievable. Yeah.
Like, I'm not a fan of the band.
Okay.
But I like Rick Danko's voice is amazing. Richard Manuel's voice is amazing.
Amazing.
And then Levon Helm's voice, amazing.
Yeah. I mean, they're devastating when they sing together.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
But it's just like, if he was in the band, he'd be the fourth singer in the band.
I don't think I think he'd be behind Robbie Robertson and both their mics would be off.
So he'd be up there pretending.
Vocal-wise.
He wouldn't know. If he was in the band, he was not like a look at me kind of dude.
Jerry.
Real. Like he would not be like.
Could
like
have
you
fooled
watch
me with those cut off sweatpants.
I'm telling you. Okay. But look at Last Waltz when he's going the night they drove old. He's like he's Robbie Robertson singing like you'd think. You'd think it was his crowning achievement, his vocals on this thing.
I think that his mic was off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's, you had said something that I guess it was in the book or something.
I think it's in Levon's book.
Okay.
I think.
But it's the kind of thing where it's just like, Jerry wouldn't be hamming it up like that.
Right. Right.
Like,
right.
Robbie Robertson's a ham.
He's a ham. He's a ham.
But that's the thing, is like, Jerry's not a ham. He just can't sing very well.
He's a pure.
Compared to. Look, his voice is fine. That is sound like I'm picking on the guy. I actually root for him. It's the other five guys I don't like.
I mean, that's what's interesting about his voice, you know, is the imperfectness of it.
Yeah. And I like that about it.
Yeah.
But I also, the other guys straight up can't sing.
They straight up can't sing.
Yeah.
Yeah, they should not be singing.
No. Or they can't write songs.
I don't know.
What's the best Phil Lesh song?
Well, I don't know, Tom. See, the thing is, you ask me these questions like,
uh-huh.
like you want to know my uh-huh. opinion, but usually you already like have an answer lined up.
Oh, I know.
Yeah.
Look, Do I have an agenda? Yeah, a little bit.
A little bit.
A little. Yeah. We're just funnin'.
Yeah, I know.
You're not supposed to. No, look, everybody, and I'll say this. You like what you want to like. If the Grateful Dead's your favorite band, God bless you. You listen to them all day long.
All day.
I'm glad you found the thing you love.
It'll bring you a lot of joy in a quarantine.
All I want. Oh, my God. What if I came out of quarantine? What if that was my side hustle? I came out of quarantine a deadhead.
A deadhead?
And I'm just like, then I'd go see, I'd go follow Dead and Company.
Well, that's a whole other conversation.
Yeah, we won't have that conversation.
Yeah, don't do that.
No, I'm not going to follow Dead and Company.
I know, I believe you.
I promise I won't.
I believe you.
I promise I won't.
Yeah.
Well, Nicole Lawrence, underscore, what is it? Underscore Nicole Lawrence?
No, I think it's Nicole Lawrence and then three underscores.
Are you? Okay.
I just wanted to see how far I could go, you know?
Sure. You're pushing the limits musically and in terms of underscores. Well, this is, I think we're being told.
Yeah.
Well, Nicole, you're one of my favorite people, and thank you for doing this.
Tom, you're one of my favorite people. Thank you so much. It's such an honor.
Well, thank you for this, and we're going to hear the song I'll Be Seeing You coming up right next after this. And now I'm just fascinated to see how long this car alarm goes. Why do they still have car alarms? Is anybody running out now going like, somebody's breaking into somebody's car?
No.
No, everybody's just like, some idiot left their car alarm on.
Right.
A car alarm goes off. Nobody's ever just like, hey, there's a car thief in the neighborhood.
Right.
Let's get it. Let's go get him. It's just like, why can't you tend to your own car, stupid?
Right.
Like, there's these things that no one registers as like what, like if a home alarm went off, everybody would be just like, what's going on in that house?
Right.
But a car alarm, everybody disregards.
Not in LA, yeah. Fades into the background.
All right. Thank you, Nicole.
Thanks, Tom. Thank you.
Oh my God, how good is that? The best, right? It is the best. She's the best. Thank you to Nicole Lawrence, and once again, hit her up for lessons. I don't know what I'm doing. What am I doing commercially? I don't get a piece of the action. Or don't. You do what you want. The only thing I want you to do is stay healthy. That's all I want you to do. Stay healthy. Best Show will be back next week. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Patreon.com/TheBestShow. And we will keep it going, and I will talk to you next week. Thank you for supporting the show. I really appreciate it. Bye.